Hello, welcome back to Coach Enya Below the Bar podcast. So I am just starting week 8 of my calorie deficit. And for the last 7 weeks, I have been given a weekly update, not only on my podcast, but on my page as well. I've been given daily updates on my coaching Instagram page of my weigh-ins. And the aim of documenting the weigh-ins was to just educate people and show you that just because the scale spiked overnight, doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It doesn't mean that you've gained body fat. And if you actually logically analyze your last 24 hours, your previous 24 hours, when you stand on the scale and it spikes, ask yourself, is your time of the month? Did you have more carbs than usual yesterday? Did you have a big meal before bed? Have you been to the loo in a few days? Did you have a tough workout? There's always a logical reason as to why I spiked. It's never body fat. It's impossible for it to be body fat. So that's why I have been documenting it. And, you know, I can pinpoint exactly why it spiked, how it dropped, why it's staying the same, etc. It's not going to drop every day. Okay. If anything, it's going to increase every day, but drop back down again. There will always be fluctuations. You can't avoid that. But don't expect it to drop every day. So, for example, when I recorded my last episode, I was just off the back of a half marathon. It was a Monday when I recorded this. The half marathon was a Saturday. I also got my period on the Thursday or Friday just before the half marathon. I had to carb load for the half marathon. And then I had water retention on top with my PMS, etc. So there was just the scale went into chaos. And I was like 65.8 or around like nearly 66. I'm 64 bang on now today. Well, I was yesterday. But anyway, going back to last week. And, you know, that previous week, I was starting to get into the 64s, like the high 64s, like 64.7. And then obviously with the PMS and the half marathon, it started going back up into the 65s, which is totally understandable and totally expected. So then Monday came around after the half marathon happened, after I was back on track with normal food and stuff, and the scale gradually came down until, you know, it was in the high 64s, then the mid 64s, and then lo and behold, yesterday it was bang on 64. So it was still dropping up until the end of the week. So that just goes to show that, you know, if you've been on a weekend away and you stand on the scale and it spikes, it's literally just you had more carbs than usual, probably had more salty foods than usual, probably had some alcohol, could be your time of the month. There you go. So it's steadily dropping now, which is great. And I am on starting week 8 now, and I'm finishing it up the last weekend of August. It should be going into the first week of September, but I do have a hens that I'm going to Benidorm on a hens the last weekend of August. So I think, yeah, that's like a Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and I'll be finished the following Wednesday with the deficit. So yeah, I'll still come back and I'll still stay on track for those 3 days, but that's when I plan to finish it up. But yeah, it's nice to see the scale going down, and I always talk about how it's very easy to not stick to the plan when things aren't going your way. You know, you start throwing your toys out of the pram, you start getting frustrated, and it's very easy for someone to twist your arm to go out for food, or you order a takeaway, or you're just fed up, you start skipping the gym, you start skipping steps, what's the point, this is not working. But when you persevere and you do the work when you really don't want to, even when you feel like the scale is against you and nothing's working and nothing's budging, when you actually start to see the results start to show down the line, like myself, I remember I was talking 1 week about the scale not budging for a full week. You know, my scale didn't budge actually nearly for 3 or 4 weeks. We had to keep experimenting with calories, dropping them, increasing cardio until eventually things actually started to budge. But when you can persevere and then things actually start happening, you're so glad you stuck it out. And then also, it just proves that, like, you need to trust the process. But I always say motivation is fleeting, and you're never going to be motivated 90% of the time. I could count on one hand the amount of times I'm motivated in a month, never mind a week. You have to do the work when you don't feel like doing it. But results cultivates motivation. So, you know, it cultivates, did I say that right? Results cultivates motivation. Sorry, I'm just having one of those moments. So when you start seeing results showing up, you actually start becoming more disciplined, because you're like, no, this is actually working. Like, what I'm doing is working. I'm not going to go out to a beer garden now and waste loads of calories and alcohol when, like, I'm on a roll here. I'm not going to order a takeaway just because I have no food in. I'll find something in the presses and the fridge to make a high protein meal, and I'll just get in my car and go to the shops now. Like, you actually start to become more disciplined, but there's a process to get to that point, okay? You don't develop it overnight, but you have to persevere and you have to put the work in when you don't feel like it. That's the deal. That's how you earn discipline, okay? Eventually it just becomes a way of life and it doesn't feel like a chore anymore. But there's nothing more rewarding when you've been putting in the hard work and it eventually starts to show up. So just while I'm on the subject of being in a calorie deficit, I do feel like the training 5 days a week in the gym and training for, you know, running, like, I know I'm training for the actual official marathon training hasn't begun yet. That will probably in the next couple of months start. But obviously I've been doing like a half marathon, like 2 weeks ago. I did a 10km race. It's part of the Irish Life Dublin race series. I did that out in Swords. That was a lovely morning. We got great weather for it. It was scorching and it was just such a lovely atmosphere. But I done that as well. And I'm running like 3 days a week, okay? And I was actually talking to my running coach because I have my own coach for my fat loss and my physique. And who is Adam. And then I have my running coach, which is Jamie, okay? Jamie's ran like 2 Ironmans. Like, he is just like bionic man. Like, he's like superhuman. Honest to God, I don't know how people do Ironmans. Like, imagine doing a 42-kilometer run. Is it like, I think it's like 170-kilometer cycle. And then I think they do like a 5-kilometer swim. I could be totally wrong. Do you know what? I'm actually going to open Google and I'm going to look this up. Full Ironman stats, just so I can show you what these psychopaths actually do, like, because it's superhuman. Full Ironman. I actually never heard of these up until a few years ago. But these are a thing, like, people enter these. So a full Ironman distance triathlon consists of a 3.9-kilometer swim, 180-kilometer bike ride, and a full marathon in one day. Now imagine running one marathon, okay? Now I'm absolutely terrified about running the Dublin Marathon, 42 kilometers in October. That's just one marathon, okay? And in the same day, they have to cycle 180 kilometers and swim 3.9 kilometers out in the sea as well. Like, just superhumans. And then they have half Ironmans as well, where, like, you basically half the distance of everything there. So I think he's currently training for a half one. But Jesus Christ, like, imagine the energy. But what I'm finding is, at the moment, when I approach my coach, Adam, I wanted to drop body fat. As I said, I was away a good few times this year and, you know, training for the Dublin City Half Marathon and stuff like that. Made a few mistakes with nutrition, put on a bit of weight. You know, it was expected while I was going away, and I said I was going to knuckle down in the summer. So I'm going to the gym 5 days a week. I'm doing a posterior day. So that's like any muscle behind you. So your bum, your hamstrings, your back. I'm doing 2 leg days, 2 lowers, and then 1 push day, such as chest, your shoulder, and then I'm doing a full upper. So I'm doing chest and back. But I'm finding that it's very demanding on my body, as well as I'm doing 5 cardio sessions. I'm actually doing 6 cardio sessions now. My coach upped my cardio this week. So I'm doing 40 minutes 6 days a week now. Okay, now, I don't do 40 minutes on a Stairmaster and then go out and do a run later on. Like, on the days that I have to do a run, I just swap it out instead of a Stairmaster. But I'm finding that my legs aren't able to recover properly. And obviously, it's been really, really warm this week. That's definitely been a huge factor. But I do find that my legs aren't recovering properly because, you know, I'm putting such demand on my body. Especially my legs. Like, you know, I'm walking 10 to 12,000 steps a day too. Running, leg days, etc. So I've decided to, I had to basically say to myself, what's more important here? Like, what is the goal? So I do feel like I have enough muscle on my frame. I can definitely maintain it. Could I focus on my upper body workouts without any issue? Yes. But when it comes to my legs, I think I'm going to cut it down to 1 leg day a week now. And, you know, give them that extra day to recover in between runs and stuff, because it is taking its toll. I can feel it in my pace. I can feel it in my legs when I'm running. They feel heavy. And I need to just take a step back and be like, okay, and you're like, you can't be good at everything. You can't, like, it is a bit of cross training. You're doing bodybuilding and you're training for a marathon. But I have to decide here, do I need to just cut back a bit with training, still go to the gym, just not do as many sessions? And then the one leg day I do, I put my all into it, you know, and I go for really good quality reps. And, you know, that way my legs will be probably recovered then when I go out and do my 3 runs a week. And I'm not kind of sabotaging my progress, I suppose. Like, you're kind of just going around in circles, like battering your legs in training, and then you're going out to try and train for your marathon or your half marathon, whatever it is, just training in general when it comes to running. And you're getting nowhere because you're not letting your legs recover properly. So yeah, I had to decide that this week. So running is my priority at the minute because I'm going to be running the Dublin Marathon. That's my goal in October. So I want to get good at that, and I don't want anything standing in the way of it. Am I going to be an absolutely, you know, record breaker when it comes to the marathon? No, I'm not training to beat everyone. I'm not training to come first. But Jesus, imagine that someone does have to come first, and that's going to be a superhuman as well. But I want to be in the best shape and position possible when I'm running the Dublin Marathon, because I want to give it a good go, you know. I don't, and I also had to come to terms with, I don't want to be putting pressure on myself for a time for my first marathon. I want to enjoy it. I really, really do want to enjoy it. And, you know, will I do one again? I don't know. I'll see after this one. But I just know for sure I want to leave no stone left unturned. And I don't want to be going into a 42 kilometer run under recovered, under fueled, legs hanging off me. Yeah, I want to rectify all those issues now in training. So yeah, I'm only doing one leg day now, and two upper days. I'll do a posterior day, a lower day, and a two upper day. So 4 sessions instead of 5. So I'm not really focusing on legs that much. It's more upper body. But I do think you should still train your legs if you're running. I have a good bit of muscle on my legs anyway to maintain at least, but you just avoid injury. And look, you're going to be able to run better when you have stronger legs, you know, because they are the things that get you from A to B when you're running. What else do I have here on my list? And especially because I'm actually in a calorie deficit while I'm training at the moment. It's not obviously ideal either. Would I go into a calorie deficit and train for a marathon again? No, I probably wouldn't, to be honest. But like I always said, just after these last 8 weeks, I do feel like, I don't think it's impacted my pace massively, but I do think obviously affects recovery. I do think it slowed me down maybe by about 5 to 10 seconds. You know, I just feel my strategy when it comes to running, like especially my long runs, have to be a bit different. I'm obviously not eating like high carb all week. It's only like a couple of days beforehand or even a day beforehand. So I do think all of that does factor into recovery and stuff like that. So I've only 6 weeks left now on this deficit. I'm just going to see it through, but I wouldn't recommend doing it again. By the time the Dublin Half Marathon comes around in September, I'll be back into maintenance calories, thankfully, by about 3 or 4 weeks at that stage. And then, you know, obviously I'll be back at maintenance for the full marathon as well. So that's not going to be a concern, but I wouldn't recommend it. I'm actually glad I done it as an experiment. I do understand now why people say don't do it, and I've often said it on here, don't do it. I wouldn't recommend it. But now that I've put myself in those shoes, I wouldn't recommend it. I would definitely advise against it, just from a recovery standpoint. Like, I don't feel like I'm drained. I don't feel like I'm hungry or anything. But I do just feel my legs take that little bit extra longer to recover. And we love fresh legs around here. And what else do I have on my list? So yeah, I did that 10 kilometer run. Sorry, I know some people are probably listening to this and not interested in running, but this is just what I'm doing at the moment. I just always do a little kind of like weekly wrap up at the start of the podcast, because I do want to document my marathon training and also my calorie deficit before I jump into the main topic. But yeah, I did a 10 kilometer race, and again, it was really, really hot this week. So I was doing small runs in the park, and the heat does affect your pace as well. Like, you feel quite sluggish, and that's nothing to even do with a calorie deficit. You feel quite sluggish. You don't feel you have as much power. You fatigue that little bit quicker. it's harder to braid, you know, because if you're Irish, you're living in a country where you're not used to heat like this. I don't know how people travel over to hot countries who live in Ireland and they travel over to likes of Spain or, you know, Rome, Milan, and do full marathons. Like, I don't know how you do it. Like, I would collapse. I would actually collapse. Like, obviously the natives and the locals are used to that. They're acclimatized to it. But just going over, like, you'd have to train in hot weather to do a marathon in a hot country. Like, you'd have to, because it would be a shock to the system otherwise. I don't enjoy running in the heat, and I wouldn't mind in the spring or in the winter. I was like, oh God, it's shit going out here in the cold training. Give me the cold weather any day. Because it's actually nice and cool once you start running. Then you obviously you feel warm, you start warming up in the cool weather, but when you start heating up and you're already running in 25 degrees, like, it's awful. So we got a scorcher on Sunday, which is yesterday, for that 10 kilometer run in Swords, as it was the 10 kilometer Fingal run. It was part of the Dublin Race Series. Lovely atmosphere. And it was actually a lovely route. Now, we were running down the Swords bypass for the first 4 kilometers, and we were on the main road, obviously, and we were right under the sun. So the run started at like 9:30, which wasn't too bad. It wasn't too warm at that stage, but we were running under the direct sun for 4 kilometers. Now, it did feel tough. And in fairness, now, it was probably my quickest part of the race. I was running between 5:20 to 5:30 kilometers. And when I got to 5 kilometers, I took a cup of water. There was a water station, and I poured water over me. There was people outside their gardens with hoses and stuff like that. It was lovely. I just kept drowning myself, because it did help to regulate my body temperature, and it did cool me off, and it made things a little bit easier. And then you're running down these country roads for the other half of it. And it was good because we were actually in the shade because the trees were covering us, which was ideal. And then I think for the last 2 kilometers, we were back out into the sun, but it was lovely. And do you know what I've started to notice? You start to see the same faces at these races. There's just a lovely community when it comes to running. Now, I still find it uncomfortable. I don't like it. I don't think I'm ever going to enjoy running. Like, I do find it uncomfortable. Just give me a Stairmaster and dumbbells any day of the week. You know, I just rather stationary cardio. But I have to do this if I want to be able to run 42 kilometers. I have to do things like this to break myself in, to get used to it, to understand how it feels to run for long distances, you know. But now, it was a lovely race, and I did it in 57 minutes and 56 seconds, 10 kilometers. My average pace was around 5:45, and I was surprised because I did think after doing a couple of runs this week in that heat, I was a bit kind of knocked and I lost my confidence a bit, and I did think I was going to do a whole lot worse just because I felt a little bit more exhausted in the training runs. But I surprised myself and I was delighted with that. I really was. So yeah, you do start to see the same face, and it is a lovely community and everyone's so supportive. And like, I am addicted to Strava now and following people and seeing their progress as well, like, and people giving you the kudos and stuff, another app. But you might have noticed as well that obviously it was very warm this week. It probably could be one of the warmest weeks that we have this year. I don't know whether we're going to get any other weeks like we did this past week. But exercising in the heat, like, you know, you do have to accept that you're unfit, because I did start to think I was unfit this week. But, you know, your energy levels are going to take a hit. And also, you need to be just super hydrated, like, and stand in the shade or exercise in the shade if you can. If you're running outdoors, if you're doing any type of exercise outdoors, try do it in the shade. Try do it in the early morning or in the evening, you know, not at peak, when the temperature is peaking during the day, which is usually like the early afternoon. Just drink electrolytes with your water. Just hydrate. Like, you know, if you're exercising, you're going to be sweating a lot. You need to replace that sweat. And how you will know if you are overhydrated or underhydrated: if you're underhydrated, your urine is going to look like tea. It's going to be really, really dark yellow. So thankfully now, it's only the odd time that my urine would be like that. Sorry, TMI, but I'm just using myself as an example. Usually it's when I wake up in the morning, because I haven't drank water in like 8 or 9 hours. And, you know, once you start getting the water into you, your water should start to be like kind of like a pale yellow. If it's like absolutely see-through and it looks like the colour of water, you're probably overhydrated. But yeah, you can tell by the colour of your urine. Actually, after my 10 kilometre run, when I came home, I went to the loo and I had like dark urine and I was like, right, I need to get more water into me. Because I obviously lost a lot of sweat. I probably didn't even drink enough, even though I thought I drank a lot of water before the race. It just goes to show the heat and exercise will dehydrate you. So that's a good way of telling if you are not drinking enough water or if you are drinking enough water. And also, if you're dehydrated too, what your body will do, like I look at my mother, right, all she does is just drink tea. I don't think that woman has never bought a bottle of water and drank it. Like, she's just mad about tea. That's it. Mad about tea. She might have the odd Diet Coke if she gets a McDonald's. But what I was saying is, if you aren't a water drinker and you are dehydrated, especially when it comes to the heat, okay, not only is your urine going to be dark yellow, but when you stand on the scale, if you're trying to lose weight and you're not drinking enough water, when you stand on the scale the next day, after a really, really hot few days of not drinking enough water, your body is going to try hold on to the little water that it has within its tissues to keep yourself hydrated. Okay, it's like it's going into survival mode. And sometimes you notice that when you come back from a hot country, your scale spikes, yeah, because you've probably consumed more carbohydrates than usual, had more salty foods than usual, had more alcohol than usual. But also, you've just come from a hot country where you probably weren't drinking enough water either, especially if you were drinking alcohol, you're going to be dehydrated anyway. But I notice I always get like swollen ankles. You know, my skin is a bit softer or bouncier just because I'm holding more water. So if you stood on the scale at any stage this week and you felt like you ticked all your boxes, but it was holding or it was fluctuating, it kept spiking, the heat probably had a lot to do with that and the fact that you weren't drinking enough water. And if that happens again, if we do get a nice few days again and it's absolutely scorching and you feel like you're ticking all the boxes, you stepped on the scale, it's still spiking, ask yourself, have I drank enough water? What colour is my urine? Okay. And if it's dark yellow, then you know your body is holding on to water. Okay. It's very common. It happened to me this week at one or two stages. And then I woke up this morning after my 10 kilometre run yesterday. I ate 200 calories more because I would have burned a lot of calories on that 10 kilometre run. I ate 200 calories over my calorie deficit yesterday. So instead of a 500 calorie deficit, I would have been in a 300 calorie deficit. And my scale spiked this morning because I had more carbs than usual. And there was a simple explanation, even though I drank loads of water yesterday as well. But yeah, it wasn't due to dehydration that the scale spiked. It was extra carbs and extra food. So anyway, moving on from all of that, the main topic of this podcast is smartwatches. So I invested in a Garmin Forerunner 165 at the start of the year when I wanted to take on running. Okay. Now I've tried Fitbits, I've tried the Apple Watch, and I didn't mind the Fitbit too much, but I didn't like the Apple Watch because the battery is shy. Fitbit's fine. You get a few days out of that. But the Garmin Forerunner 165 is just, I paid around €250 to €280 was around that. And it was worth every penny in my opinion. I ordered it online. I got it from Currys. I ordered it online from Currys. And yeah, the delivery only like took a day or two. But yeah, ordered it in January. And I haven't looked back. Honestly, like I wear it every day. And that's not like me, because whenever I had a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, I'd wear it for a few days and then leave it off for about a week. And yeah, it was just, you know what used to turn me off a bit? It was just having to constantly charge it. But I invested in a Garmin because anyone who is like, who takes running seriously told me to invest in a Garmin. And I just have a little kind of pros and cons list for a few smartwatches here. So you might decide which one suits you more, but I'm just going to obviously cover the Garmin Forerunner 165 first. So if you are taking running seriously, I would recommend this watch. They do have a number of models, but the Forerunner, and then I think there's another one, I can't think of it. They range in different prices. There's a few models, but this one, I suppose, is in between. So if you want to take running seriously or even outdoor training, whether you're a hiker or something like that, or a cyclist, this watch is great for that. The battery life, lads, right? This is the best thing about this watch. So I'm going to use last week as an example. I charged my watch on the Friday evening, ran the half marathon on the Saturday morning. Then Monday or Tuesday, I did a 40 minute run. Towards Friday, I did a 40 minute run. and also using it for day-to-day stuff as well, wearing it while I was sleeping, getting social media or, you know, push notifications as well. And I have it on sleep mode at night, so like the screen is off at night and I don't have always display on. It only activates, you know, when you're like, you're looking at your watch, when you actually tilt it towards your face. I charged that on the Friday night before the half marathon, and the night before my 10 kilometer run, so that would have been Saturday evening, the watch was still on 18% from the week before. Like, that's how good that battery life is. Like, it's just unbelievable. And that's why I keep wearing it. It's because that hindrance of not having to charge it constantly is not there. So would solely pick it for battery life alone, and if you wanted to take running seriously. The heart rate on it, when it reads your heart rate, it's actually very active. And I remember listening to a podcast before of someone who had a Garmin 2, and he went to get a VO2 test. So that I won't be able to articulate that properly. So I'm going to actually just VO2 max test. I'm going to tell you exactly what it's for. So a VO2 max test measures the maximum amount of oxygen your body can utilize during exercise. Okay, so I was listening to a podcast with a guy who went to get this done. You can go into clinics and get it done, and your Garmin actually tells you how good your VO2 max is. And he said that the readings from his VO2 max and the readings that his smartwatch, his Garmin gives him, were like probably a point to one off. Like, they were very, very accurate. So like, that just goes to show how accurate a Garmin is. You know, just it's nearly on par with like a clinical test. So the heart rate is obviously very active, because a lot of smartwatches, like, a lot of people depend on the calorie readings and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, I burned 500 calories doing this, that means I can eat 500 calories back. Like, they sometimes over and underestimate your calorie burn, you know. But apparently the Garmin is meant to be like near enough, like bang on par to what you actually do burn. I love it as well for the pacing strategy. So you download the Garmin app, and you can do this thing where you can key into the app being like, okay, I want to run a race, a half marathon, under 2 hours. And you can do this pacing strategy where it's like, do you want to start off slow and then pick up pace towards the end? Or do you want to start off fast and then slow off at the end? And it tells you the exact pace you have to do it. It's like, okay, for the first kilometer, 5:50, second kilometer, 5:51. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's really, really accurate like that. And then when you activate that, when you're in your run, it will pop up on the screen to be like, you need to speed up if you want to hit your goal. And then obviously, like, during runs, there's a gauge that if you do a setting, say, okay, I'm going to run 10 kilometers today and I want to run it between 5:40 to 5:60 pace. Well, sorry, not 5:40, 5:40 to a 6 minute pace. It will have a gauge on it, right? So, you know, it's like, imagine you were standing on an analog weighing scale. So, you know, the one with like the little kind of needle, that's what it's like. So it would be like, you're going too fast, you're going too slow. Okay, you're in range. So if it tells you you're going too slow, that obviously means that you're probably not going to hit your time goal. It's really good like that. And it vibrates and it makes a noise as well. So like, if you have earphones in, if you don't have earphones in, the watch will vibrate. And then obviously every kilometer, it will, now I know a lot of smartwatches do this, it will say to you, kilometer one, 5:48, kilometer two, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's really good like that. Like, it's, there's probably like tons of more features that I'm forgetting, but it's just, I just love how much you can customize your runs, you know. Or, you know, for performance and stuff like that. And then it's literally like having a coach in your pocket. Like, it's telling you if you're running too slow, if you're running too fast. And my coach uses this app. It's called Training Peaks. My running coach. And he'll put a run into that. And your Garmin is connected to that. It's connected to your Strava. It can connect to Runner if you are using Runner to coach you through runs. That's like a self-coaching app. So yeah, I would definitely recommend the Garmin. And even with your sleep, like when it's tracking your sleep, like, it's very accurate. I'll tell you if you got a deep sleep, if you didn't get enough sleep, and then your body battery. So obviously if you had a really taxing day, like you're doing a 10 kilometer run, you're going on a walk and then you go to the gym that night as well. Like it will tell you, you had a really, really stressful day. You're going to need like 72 hours of recovery time. So that means like you need a good 2 or 3 days of recovery before your body is 100% again. Now, I know a lot of smartwatches can tell you that stuff too, but I just think Garmin is way more accurate. You know, like for the Garmin, it could tell you you need 72 hours of rest. Another watch could tell you, oh, you only need 24 hours of rest, you know. But yeah, I can't fault it. Now, the Apple Watch, I think, and the Samsung Watch, I think it's more ideal if you dabble in exercise, but it's more better as an everyday watch, like for notifications and stuff like that. Now, the Garmin does give you push notifications for, you know, social media, WhatsApp and stuff like that. And I have them turned on. But yeah, the Apple Watch and the Samsung Watch is more like of an everyday type of watch rather than a sports watch. I know some people use the Apple Watch for runners, the Samsung watches as well. But the battery life is just crap, lads. Like you probably get 1 to 2 days max. And if you're an avid runner, like the last thing you want to be doing is charging your watch constantly, you know. I just think an Apple Watch and a Samsung Watch is ideal because you're not going to have the screen on for like an hour every day if you're running, or every second or tour day, you know, along with every other thing. Like I don't really use my watch for social media or push notifications. I use it to like track my recovery, to pace me in my runs and stuff like that. So yeah, it's the Apple Watch is fine if you like run once a week, or like if you wanted to count your steps or whatnot, or if you just use it for like, you know, emails, social media notifications and stuff like that. And then the Fitbit is ideal for like beginners and wellness tracking, you know. Like it's ideal if someone just wants to start walking and they just want to improve their step count. Like I know, I think you can track running on it. I vividly remember that you can track running on it. Is it accurate? Well, the last time I ran with it on my wrist was during lockdown, and that's when I only started doing 5Ks, you know. So I wouldn't have used it long enough to know whether it's good for running, but Garmin would probably be, you know, the top watch for a runner. Fitbit is grand if you just want to take walking seriously. Yeah, if you just want to kind of get into health and fitness and you just want to start off with the gym, and then it obviously tracks your workouts in the gym too, tracks your calorie burn, your heart rate and stuff like that. Like I always tell my clients, if you're using the Stairmaster or a cross trainer or a bike, you can hold on to the handles on the machine, it will read your heart rate. Or your Fitbit, your smartwatch, can tell you what your heart rate is as well. It's easy to use as well for not so tech heavy people, and it covers the main things like steps, heart rate, sleep and stress. But again, it wouldn't be ideal for like a high performance athletes, you know, for someone who wants to take their training very seriously. And then there's another one, I think it's called Coros, that would be like nearly like the Aldi version of Garmin. So it's endurance, it's for endurance athletes on a budget. So the battery life is very good as well. The GPS and sport modes are very good, and the performance metrics are accurate too. But it has fewer smartwatch features and it hasn't got a great user interface. And the Garmin's touchscreen for the most part. And then it has buttons on the side of it and stuff like that. But yeah, that's just my little review of the watches out there at the moment. So just to summarize, Garmin 100% if you want to take running seriously. It's not great for like tracking gym workouts, but I don't track my calorie burn when I'm lifting weights. I don't lift weights to burn calories. I lift weights to get stronger and build muscle, you know, so that doesn't bother me. But if I turned it on when I was doing like, you know, the bike or the Stairmaster, it would track that. It would tell me my calorie burn. But yeah, I just use it for running, notifications for WhatsApp and stuff, and then, you know, just performance metrics and stuff. But yeah, about €250 to €280. I ordered it from Currys online. Apple Watch and Samsung Watch, ideal if you just kind of dabble in exercise, but mostly an everyday smartwatch. Fitbit, ideal if you just want to get into walking and you just kind of start in your health and wellness journey. Probably wouldn't be great for running if you want to pick up running, not walking. And then Coros, it's a great alternative to Garmin if it's not within your price range. But yeah, I just think Garmin is king. Call me biased, but I've used it now since January. I probably go max one day without it on my wrist. It's always there. It's a great watch, and the battery life, you could nearly get 10 days over. Sometimes I nearly get 10 days over. Like it's unreal. It really is. And then obviously, you know, if you have your AirPods in as well, like you can use the watch to like press pause and skip to the next song and stuff because it's touchscreen. But yeah, would highly recommend. So that pretty much sums up this week. just covered my calorie deficit, my run on progress, how to stay hydrated in the heat, what to expect on the scale, and then my little review summary of smartwatches out there at the moment, because I know a lot of people have been asking me about my Garmin, but I just wanted to kind of like give you the pros and cons of each watch if you're thinking of investing in one, or you currently have one of those and you're thinking, oh, I think it's time for a change. But yeah, would highly recommend the Garmin. But thanks for listening and see you in the next one.